Back on the line with Brent. We just had a power failure here at Free Radio Central, or where I put it together on. So you were saying, you were talking about your experiences, today at the memorial. I was asking you about that, and also about previously at the catch.
The change of tone for me is mainly that we had the 90 people a couple of weeks ago at the Warming Center during a rain event, and it's jarring because we normally start the season with around 50 or so, but since there's no winter shelter, I've been becoming increasingly frustrated and even anxious about what's to come, because the season builds, numbers. Like, we can't do more than 90 people on the floor at the Calvary Episcopal, so we are at our margin. We say we never turn anyone away, and I want to commit to that. So there's no winter shelter. The catch didn't get anything. They had recommendations. The city council didn't get anything together. We heard that the county is recommending saying that they're happy to play ball with the city and add another venue for winter shelter. We don't know who's going to. We assume it'll be Salvation Army, because that seems to be the only game in town now. But I have lots of complaints about the Salvation Army, where I've been playing very nicely with them for years, and now we have some real, real incredible complaints with that organization. So I'm shooting myself in the foot. I'm making things difficult for my nonprofit when I decide to stake out these frustrations and be clear. But we're seeing more people outside suffering, and with the storage program, I'm very, very close to the population. They come in suffering, right, on a daily basis. They come in wet and cold, and with various needs. And so, in a way, it would be easier if I was a machine. But 7 days a week, I'm processing, giving people what they need over and over and over. So I guess the way it's showing up for me is I see the catch as it's weird because they have industry people, people from Downtown Streets team. Brooke is on there. Also city staff, from someone who heads the Downtown Business Association, and then other people who have virtually, maybe lived experience, but virtually no experience whatsoever in homelessness. So, but when you go to those meetings, you see city department heads littering, around the room. Megan Bunch is there, and it really takes on the feeling. I've been denied to make a presentation of any kind to the catch as a director of Warming Center, the storage program, somebody who's, I've got a couple other important things to say about scalable design of our organization in general. And it's just, so I've been getting frustrated in a lot of different ways. And, with city council non-action, the catch the way it is, and the county stonewalling us, all the while we're increasing services again. Warming center, storage program, laundry program, and in a couple weeks we're starting shower Sundays. So shower, storage, and laundry all under one roof. It's quite remarkable.
You mentioned that your your number of people seeking shelter at the winter warming center was 90. How's the volunteer situation coming along?
Volunteering is going good. It always is at the beginning of the season. If I have to open, 10 times in 1 month, it can get taxing. It can be difficult. But this year, I'll probably be relying on, some management staff, some people I'll be hiring. Our budget, although we're not getting any money from the city or county currently, I have written some grants. We have made some really good appeals to community groups and local citizens. And so we're doing okay financially, not great. We're still probably the entire thing all said is lower than Phil Kramer's salary, but we're achieving a lot. A hundred words for each question.
It's okay. What is
today? I was.
Go ahead.
I yelled at. You weren't there the other night, but I freaked out on a interagency, one of the federal government people who for homelessness. Mm-hmm. I forgot what it's called. Interagency on homelessness.
That's the one that I think Robert Narbutt is now heading or whatever.
Yes, right. So we had somebody. The catch had somebody presenting, and again, I was unable to share. It's critical time for us to share with the catch right now, but. This person was touting housing first and ending homelessness and giving a glowing report. This person is responsible for all of California and Arizona. And it was just this feel-good thing about how we're ending homelessness together, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, this, I'm about to ask a question for this person that's not going to go good. Mm-hmm. And really, I just went on, I just was very intense about my critique of Housing First, how it's been a heist, it's tanked out, it hasn't been successful in any city in the country. We're seeing no glowing reports. They haven't ended housing homelessness, even for vets, except for maybe a dozen cities. And that was the thing that, you know, Obama was going to be doing, you know, claiming that, and if you remember, 180-2020, they're going to end chronic homelessness by 2020. That's just in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
So I was, you know, just saying, I've been to 40 cities, and all of these cities are quite frustrated. In Santa Cruz, we've just turned our backs on basic needs. So it was intense. And then finally, somebody, Taj, stood up, and he's very upset with me. And then, you know, I think we had little verbal argument.
We should say Taj is the co-chair of this
co-chair.
Of this group. Yeah.
Yeah. So today I really tried to limit, because, you know, all morning as I'm waking up this morning, I'm like, wow, am I about to really uncork it again? Because I've so much energy and so much frustration, passion leading to frustration, that I sometimes don't know quite how that's going to show up if I give myself permission to just. Be, you know, just to share my frustration. So today I really wanted to be measured. At the same time, you know, I didn't list all of those, but about 10 of those, 10, 15 people are downtown chronic inebriates, as they're called. They're people who had very frail bodies and were left outside for years.
You're talking about the people of the 58 people who died
this
year?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And they're regular clients and people I care about. And, you know, here we are sitting there trying to, you know, be poised and, you know, tearing up and stuff, but not acknowledging that we're just going to be here next year with another list of the most frail people, as the shelters do not, and services don't prioritize people with physical health challenges. For instance, if you're a very robust person who can act right, you get prime space at the Salvation Army. If you have a mental health challenge or physical mobility challenge, you're actually in danger of being removed from these shelters. Mm-hmm.
Is that true also with the Association of Faith Communities shelter?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I know that they have a pecking order, and I don't think they actually really reach out to people with physical mobility challenges or mental health, because they're, yeah, I think they actually choose for success with that organization, so they don't really have to put them out. I don't want to speak for them. I just know that you have to get there on a bus every day at a different location around the county. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, I know lots of people who are put out for really basic. I think you have to be really respectful, really well behaved, definitely, like, you know, seeking work or getting work or housing, something like that.
None of which you require
so
for
the
warming
center.
So
the people on the street are the most vulnerable, and I think mm-hmm. everything's upside down in that regard. The people on the street should be the most hardy, not the most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. So recently, the one thing that the county did do, as it was cutting back on syringe exchange and kind of buying into the needle mania nonsense last
right.
Tuesday, is that they did, I don't know if it's terribly praiseworthy, but they moved the pickup point for the Salvation Army's, I don't really, can't really call it a winter shelter, but its program to the jail area, with the theory that, oh, they can build a shelter there, they can set up a porta potty, I don't know, maybe something else, a storage bin or something, over Sheriff Hart's objections. And I guess that was one of the things that the only thing that the catch recommended that actually got done, and of course nothing that they recommended got done at the city level. What's your reaction to all that?
Oh yeah, I mean that's a more than a year in coming. They suffered out in that parking lot in the rain all last winter. So far through the rain this year, with some of our most aggressive people who sleep outside using that population of people waiting for shelter as cover, it's been an intense again, these are people who sleep outside and are trying to seek shelter, and then other people just who hang out in that parking lot. There's fights. It's been so I applaud it. I think it's a good idea. What was I going to say about that?
I'm wondering what you thought of Hart's, Sheriff Hart's concerns about moving it to the jail area, but also...
Oh, I mean, do you know what's the most amazing thing? If you remember, only two, three short years ago, people literally had to walk all the way to 1220 River Street, often in the rain, to access shelter. You remember that? That's where the shuttle intake was initially.
Right, and that was before, of course, they barred people going to the 1220 River Street,
yeah,
which is the same place,
so none of
unless
this
they went in by vehicle.
But I think if they're, you know, I think it's much better at the sheriff's parking lot. It might be difficult for some. There's no place to really hang out. That's one of the things that, you know, people don't have, you know, good things to do throughout the day. I think mostly what people are doing, if anything, is being at the library, St. Francis Food Kitchen, accessing some services at Coral Street. So it's a little closer to those. I think it's more appropriate there than it is at that ridiculous busy corner, right? And yeah, I applaud it. I hope this is a I would like to know that it's not going to cost $1 million to establish it, though.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was standing by the door, you probably noticed, as I was giving out flyers along with Keith McHenry for this memorial service coming up on Saturday, which the Homeless Union is advertising is actually being run by, if not homeless people, at least homeless activists interested in having homeless people feel free to do their thing, although I suppose Phil Kramer would say the same thing, but still... I noticed that Taj was rather upset with both of us. That's the head of the Catch Committee. Not that I don't even know why I mentioned him, but you mentioned that you had an exchange with him, and I guess you said you also had an exchange with Phil Kramer. I thought your commentary, and you were I guess the third or fourth person to speak at the memorial today, was it was a critique, but it was. You weren't, you know, ranting and raving and waving your arms around. You know, I mean, I've seen you angry before groups that they occupy when you really got pissed.
Oh yeah,
and this was not you in those
9 years.
Right, right. But yeah. I mean, you weren't in that frame of mind. You weren't in that mood.
Yeah, that's how I was. I think whenever that was on Tuesday at the Catch I think what happened was I think Taj is just frustrated with the fact that they're not getting much done. I think he had some other interpersonal frustrations with things that we don't really know about. Usually, you know, when people are upset about something, they're projecting. But clearly, it's the peanut gallery at the Catch that is. I think if I was trying to get business done at the Catch, I would want to limit or eliminate public comments because they don't really care about what we're saying. They definitely don't care about you or Elise Caspi or, you know, again, myself or Keith McHenry, Alicia Kuhl. It doesn't help. You know, we think that they should be listening to us. We have a lot to say, well-positioned, and we think that they don't have the same knowledge set. But they, for themselves, I think it's an egocentric concept where they're really just trying to get through the night, hear some stuff, make some decisions. It's not the same thing as city council. That's why I'm really impressed that they allow us to speak at all. But what ended up happening was, you know, Keith rises, comes to the front. There's no time limit. So he just kind of, Keith McHenry these days, not unlike you, I think you actually limit yourself. But he'll just go until somebody makes him stop, right? I think that happened that night, so he was kind of winding, tangenting, and to the point where, you know, most of the room were rolling their eyes. And then Elise also has the same sort of behavior, and when it came time for me to speak to this person from the federal government, I really laid into her. So by the time Elise wanted to speak again, and she was denied by Taj, she stood up and yelled, you know, she felt like he was being disrespectful to her in his tone. And he's like, I don't have to have a good tone. Like, I have no responsibility to you. And I know what that's like as a program manager sometimes, who people are making sort of entitled demands. You and I and other activists were very entitled. We think we have this space. It's not really laid out that the Catch has is operating the space in the same way the city council does, right? So I think so. He stood up finally and said, "Keith, I don't care, and Elise, you spoke already, and Brent, I want you to speak finally, but you just disrespected somebody we invited here, And I rose to my feet to defend myself, and I said, "That's a fucking federal official touting housing first, just get me in the room with that person, whatever." So I was really dickish.
Well,
so I think he's really hit his limit.
But you believe that what you said was accurate and on target. I mean, that's the point. They're supposed to be considering realities, not just the fluff and propaganda that's being put out by government agencies or, social service folks. Or for that matter, activists with their own, notions. They're trying to cut through to the center of it, and they have to hear it. And I noticed the oral communications period of the Catch has been moved to the end of their meeting, although the beginning was this so-called public outreach, which for me is their way of avoiding community. It's a way of avoiding action. That's what the council, I think, the whole purpose of the Catch was to avoid action, as far as I'm concerned. And that's what
I don't know, because I think that was Justin's motion. I definitely know that the city manager's office is lapping this shit up. But I don't think it's the city council's interest. I think that it's where they went in a moment of confusion. If you remember, it was complete chaos and breakdown of effectiveness. So it's where they went. They go, let's have a citizens group deal with this, which I think was irresponsible of city council.
Well, remember, their big deal was to get rid of Roskamp, and then in the middle of this, they found a pushback from a lawsuit that delayed it for a week. And also,
yep.
Cummings originally came on saying, "We aren't going to do anything until we found alternate lodging for these folks." And they never found it, but they lied about it, and they allowed the 8th council member
to
do that, Susie O'Hara.
As soon as Hayduke came up with his report, I think Justin said, "Okay, that's the official word." I think he just let that be his anchor to stand on.
As soon as Susie O'Hara came up with her report, is that what you're...
No, yeah, well, Susie O'Hara, but it was mainly Hayduke just saying it's a fire hazard.
Oh, Hayduke, the fire chief, correct. Yeah,
fire chief. Sorry. Yeah.
Right, although it's kind of ironic that the tents that are sitting at 1220 River are more of a fire hazard than the ones that were out at the Ross camp, considering closer.
But they have... In our defense, they have management there too.
They have what? Say again.
I think it'd be much more difficult to put a fire out at the Ross camp than it would be at 1220.
Well, they were successful, though. I mean, I hear what you're saying. You could well be right, but in fact,
I'm not making these. I'm not defending these. I'm just saying I think that's why Justin did what he did in making the motion to create the Catch, and then the city managers went into it. You've got Lee Butler and people, several other officials from the city. I know, what are they doing in the room? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, see, I wonder if it wasn't, Justin hasn't cleared a lot of this stuff with Cynthia Matthews and Watkins beforehand. I mean, I have a feeling, I don't know, I have no evidence. I wasn't in the room and I wasn't listening to them. I don't have any documents. But he seems to go to pretty closely tail them on many of these votes, not on all of them, but on many of them, the most obvious one initially was the rent vote at the beginning of the year, the just eviction protection that went down in flames because of him. I mean, and the irony of this, I keep saying this at other points on my show, is that, he remains silent and Glover and Crone get dragged off into the bushes and recalled, he's going to lose his power. He will not have the power he has anymore. Cummings won't. Because he is power now because he's in the middle, and he gets catered to by both sides. Once the left wing is gone, he will be, I think, dismissed just as Crone, Glover, and Brown are. But
that doesn't make sense to me, because he's going to be powerful. I mean, some other people are saying he's the most powerful yet, because he's really sitting in the Cynthia Chase mayoral seat. He can switch hats whenever he wants to, based on
but only if he'll vote with the left,
he'll vote with the right.
But only as long as the March recall doesn't remove one of those two guys. See, that's the point. His remaining silent and trying to play this game of being the guy in the center and not supporting the progressives that he ran with is going to result in losing his power once they get recalled. That's my point.
I know, but yeah, but I mean, he has power in ways that you and I don't recognize. The progressive extreme left, yes, but he's well beloved in the city at large.
Don't know. I know that Stephen Kessler likes him a lot. Sentinel columnist.
He's a man about town. You never see city council people that he hangs out at different bars at public parish. He actually won the hot wing contest a few months ago. He's just ridiculously out there. He's well known in the university circles. He hangs out at Brady's. He loves punk rock. He'll be moshing it up at a punk rock show. He's very I don't know how you'd put it, but he's out there. And also he's got people who are on the left and people on the right, who agree with his take. A lot of people who are progressive I don't know what you call these people on the left anymore. In the center, who didn't support the Ross, keeping the Ross camp, right? It's not universal that everyone thought the Ross camp should stay. And so I think, and also people, for instance, my Venn diagram that the right and the left are virtually laid right on top of each other with these extreme little fringes on each side that wore it out. But for the most part, everyone else in the middle is the same. And that's about probably 50,000 voters.
Hmm. I think I have a different perspective on that. although I've heard actually, kind of a more positive take that actually agrees with you, that says that, that if you're talking about the metal being the frankly, dodos who support the existing government wars abroad and all the rest of this shit, that it's the people on the left and the right and both ends are trying to end this, and the people in the middle who are doing nothing about it or are taking on jobs to facilitate it. Similarly, with the homeless, industrial complex, if you will, locally. I mean, I've got nothing against the people I talked to today at the homeless memorial. They're nice, seem nice enough people. And, for that matter, Cummings and I, once we talk publicly, which is rarely, we're, civil with each other, so what? But in fact, the policies they're pursuing are the things that you are, properly, if I forgive the phrase, rage about, and in a mellow way, but you have to hold yourself in, because really the rage has integrity. At least I think that kind of rage does on these issues. We may disagree on some things for sure, but not on some of these basic things.
So. Well, I'm outside now. We are Rating Mar doesn't even include me in group emails. Not only are we not getting county funding, I'm kind of blocked out. Definitely on the city council. City council voted to agendize in late January, whenever they're meeting again, $10,000 to help support warming center. Voted 6-1 with Cynthia Matthews voting no, which is really really bizarre. I wonder why that is, but to even just get it on the agenda.
Remember,
it's
bizarre. You mean it's bizarre that she was the only dissenting vote, or you think?
Correct.
It's...
Yeah.
Well, remember that Matthews was also the woman who opposed free radio, 15 years ago. She was the only person who voted against Rotkin's resolution to support free radio.
She's persnickety.
She's a privileged property owner. She's a conservative Republican masquerading as a Democrat. She broke the Planned Parenthood union at when she was running Planned Parenthood. I mean, she went after Joel Miller at the Red Church. Maybe I'm picking selected instances.
A lot of people don't realize that she owns the house right across the street from the church.
What do we call that house? It's the name after some famous actress.
Zazu Pitts.
Thank you, the Zazu Pitts house. Woo woo. Right next to the hamburger joint.
Whoever the fuck that was is in the silent era.
I don't know much about her either.
It's not something we celebrate really in San Jose.
Well, what's coming up in the next week that you want people to be aware of, in and out? I mean, you've already mentioned you got some, you got a shower service perhaps coming in, Sunday
yes.
showers.
Yeah, so in partnership, Warming Center is partnering with the Association of Faith Communities. They got some of that HEAP grant, some of those millions, and they got a shower trailer and a truck purchased for them by the state. So, and they're going to use it at several locations, likely not totally fixed yet, including Food Not Bombs on Saturday, Downtown Streets Team at their meeting at 418 on Thursday, and then United Methodist or someplace on another day of the week, and then we get it on Sundays. And it's a huge boon for us. You know, we just have to staff it. We don't have to fund the thing. It's really something to rejoice for our organization, because it's, I don't know if you remember, but years ago we were talking about how do we establish, you know, a pop-up site where we have a shower trailer and a laundry van that meets up with a shipping container where we have a storage program. And the county kind of, the city entertained that for a little while, but here we are under our own steam, able to provide storage for everyone, laundry for everyone, and showers on Sunday. I'm just freaking out about how it's all come together, how difficult the years have been, but you know, all along we're kind of like able to do the work that we want to help people. So while I'm frustrated, I should be, you know, also celebrating that, you know, like I, today for the first time in public, I call myself like a renegade. You know, we're kind of a outside of the room nonprofit, and maybe that's, you know, where we can be without. Because I think I'm always trying to play with at the adults table and get a little bit of county and city funding and be at the meetings, because I'm not Robert Norse. I'm not Alicia Kuhl. I'm not Food Not Bombs' Keith McHenry. You guys all are doing great work for where your stand is, but I'm a nonprofit director of providing services, so I'm unique, specifically different. I think I'm in that middle space where they should invite me, but obviously I'm a little too caustic, and maybe I'm going to maintain that. And we're thinking about maybe we can come up with this idea. We have to rename our facility, because the day-night storage program, Laundry Wednesdays and the Shower Sundays, we want that under a banner. Downtown Homeless Services Center changed their name. Mm-hmm. We also want to now change our name to Something Services Center, not Homeless Services Center, but because our neighbors won't sustain allow that. But
I was going to ask you about that, about your situation. I know you were concerned about complaints from neighbors because people were camping nearby, and, you know, that while you would go out on one day and try to provide blankets, the next day go out and try to encourage them to move away so that...
We really weathered that storm. There have been, now there's been another camp cleanup on the other side of the highway under the, you know, out there at Camp Paradise again. And now we have an encampment. Most people haven't noticed this, but for the first time ever, we have a camp lasting almost a week and a half, going on 2 weeks, right on the levee. It's right on the path.
How many people in the camp?
I think three or four people. One got one stalwart. It's his belongings. He's, you know, we delivered people in our shuttle van up the river into other places in town. That's one of the services that we're now providing during sweeps, because mm-hmm. People, you know, have to drag their stuff. We're also allowing extra storage without an account on our shelves, so that people can, when they're running for, you know, from an exodus, a camp removal, it's one thing to protect your stuff and another to find out where the hell to go. You can't do both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Right? So we allow them. And then finally, when they find a place, we'll help transport their stuff. So this is a whole new service. We're really stoked about it. Of course, it's a little outside of our mission statement, and it's but it's something we've been wanting to do. We call it Camp Displacement Management. Help, and we believe that the city and the county should look at a even creating a program like that to help facilitate people who are moving from their camps. But so this guy, I won't name his name, but he's kind of a community anchor now. There are three or four or five people who slept there last night. So it's right at the bend at the end of Felker Street, right before it empties onto the footbridge leading to Ross. So on this side of the bridge, there's a large blue tarp and a whole bunch of shopping carts and stuff. And we're watching the police cars just roll right by it. As you know, since the murder of Joey Schumacher, people have not been able to congregate on the levee path, or, you know, and there's a sign right next to this guy. So it's kind of interesting how this might be the Martin vs. Boise thing. Maybe they just don't realize this guy doesn't have any other place to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering.
You know, there are four tents on the Water Street Bridge now.
No, really?
Yeah, and this, the same. Remember a couple of weeks ago, there was a woman in a tent.
I do.
For months, and she brandished a knife.
Well, so they said.
And in her place, all those little sort of little alcoves along the bridge, the little lookout alcoves over the river, there's a tent in either all four of those locations. Mm-hmm. So it's fairly fascinating. We're hearing, you know, Keith McHenry say today that, you know, people are having their stuff stolen and removed, and we, you know, and I totally get that that's happening, but from my view, when people really figure out the spot where they can hold tight for a while and they can make sure they're not, you know, using drugs openly or defecating or anything like that, or getting complaints is the main thing. I think you have to get to a place where no one's complaining, and then they'll leave you alone. If there are repeated complaints, that's what the police chief has said.
If you're
blocking a sidewalk in a close space
Have you noticed, Brent, that displacement has increased, decreased, or remained the same?
I think the people who are Santa Cruz people for a long time and they camp around here, they go straight into another. They know where all the zones are. You know, it's highway. They call it the island areas up the river, Camp Paradise. They call it Hell's Alley next to the cemetery. And then, of course, Poganip is where most people are. So I think it doesn't look like there's a lot of hardship unless you go straight to Coral Street. You probably saw that today. That's where we really, as a city, have to focus. That experience on Coral Street needs help. And that would be, again, a church, nonprofit, something like that, where those people can't be there on that street. What I mean to say is not that I think they shouldn't be disallowed from being there, but it's clear they need something vastly different than their experience. It is dangerous, unsanitary, extremely cold, and, you know, right while cars are spinning by, our most aggressive people are out there. I mean, I say this like, you know, like I'm thinking about law enforcement too. I don't mean to sound like that, but you know, when you pick people who are vulnerable with other people who are have mental health challenges and addictions, they don't go well together.
Do you have any connection, do you think, when you're with campgrounds where you have actually phone access to different people so you can hear what's going on, get reports from them? Does that ever happen?
I tread lightly with the camps. I had make, you know, that was part of my documentary project and a little bit with the Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz Facebook page, but I backed off. Now that we have this facility, they come here, and so I hear everything that I need to hear in this facility. Mm-hmm. And people from all runs of the homeless experience, from RV campers to those people, you know, dodging danger out there on Coral Street to people in the Poganip, they all come in here and get laundry and get blankets and socks and underwear and mm-hmm. have their storage. So we're really close to, you know, having our finger on the pulse of the, you know, we hear Alicia Cool often saying that she knows everything that there is to know about, you know, the population. I challenge that. I don't think from her RV she's able to do that. And I don't think, you know, I have my thoughts about what the homeless union actually is, but.
Will you be coming to the memorial?
Mm-hmm.
Will you be coming to the memorial on Saturday at the Food Now Bomb service?
No, I'm not gonna. I will be.
You'll be working on something else.
I'll be at the desk here, getting ready for the shift.
Uh huh. Also, you know.
When I go there for typically is to advocate for the storage program and let people know the warming center is going to be opening or not. Mm-hmm. I try to tread lightly. It's funny because I go to Food Not Bombs. I go to almost every program, every shelter. But what you don't see is those people coming here. Keith McHenry's never been in this space.
I visited myself.
You visited it. Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've noticed in the last two winters, first it was San Lorenzo, Benchlands, then it was Ross Camp. Do you see anything developing this winter that's equivalent?
Oh, my God. It's almost like we're kind of waiting with bated breath. When's it going to happen? Where is it going to happen? There aren't many. Actually, what we saw was Benchlands. Again, so there were people camping under the footbridge because there's morning mists, right? If we're not talking about rain. The rain blows that whole space out. But we knew there were four or five people camping for a month straight in the Benchlands without being removed. So we have conversations in here about that. I can't tell you here on the radio what what my encouragement is, you know, I do counsel people on, you know, how you might be able to establish an encampment, and how, you know, if you're going to do that, make sure you have, well, it's funny, here I am telling you, like, if it's, for instance, if it were the benchlands, how would they do it better than last time? I don't think there are very many appropriate places in this town at all. It would be, you know, the Ross Camp again. It would be Benchlands, Lighthouse Field. Who the hell knows?
Camp Paradise, perhaps.
Yeah, right. I think some of these places are dangerous when it comes to high river water.
Mm-hmm. So
I would like to see maybe a parking lot of a place that's closed down, but there aren't many of those anymore.
Hmm. I think I'm going to – we may not be able to get this out tonight because the power is still off up here, and I don't know how long it's going to stay off. But I have got you recorded so we can play it on Sunday if necessary, or whenever, you know, we have the opportunity to do it. I don't have much else to say myself.
Yeah, you're very generous. Thanks.
No, not really. You just cover up. Whenever I try to interrupt you, you ignore me. You keep on talking. I don't know
it's
what to tell you.
In the old days, you would turn me right down. I remember that.
Well, I can't
well,
do
that was in the radio show.
I can't do that conveniently here, but I'll work on
yeah, that's right.
establishing that. But no, I think you've got, you know, I'm glad you said what you said, and I think you know, whether you when whatever group you speak out in, I'd say speak out where you think, you know, what's on your mind. I always say this anyway to anybody, but particularly if you've been gathering information that can be helpful to educating the people you're talking to, however much your opinions differ, whether it's poverty pimps or activists you feel who are barking up the wrong tree, just, you know, keep talking.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to try to clean up some of these relationships, though. You know, the leadership of the Downtown Streets team, they're going to be here for a while. People on the catch who have professional roles, you know, Taj and some of these people are just gonna drift away. They're only here for a short time mm-hmm. in that role, but others, they actually work with the city. And I don't know what this guy's name is. He works for the planning department. He's doing the of course, then there's Don Lane, who's likely going to become mayor, city council again if they get recalled. If they don't, he won't.
We got, well, I can always hope. Don Lane's horrible. I regard these as all.
What do you think about Tim Fitzmaurice?
Tim was the
I
guy.
Know, I remember he was the one who outed you for your first Nazi salute.
He didn't out me. The city spent several hundred thousand dollars in order to enforce his notion of decorum at City Hall, which,
but
you know, Crone was the one who did it, but he did it under Fitzmaurice's pressure.
If you watch the video, Fitzmaurice said, wait. Robert Norris just did a Nazi salute.
Correct.
You know?
Correct.
Yeah, he called you out, and then Chris Crone took you to the mat, and then Bush Baker arrested you.
Right. He couldn't figure out what he was going to arrest me for, but he did it anyway. Oh well, you know, that's Butchie. He's done that many times.
And then somehow, you lost in court.
Well, I won in court because you can now. My whole point was that, you know, while we may disagree, you can't shut people down the way they're doing. The way Crone tried to do, he cut off people who were trying to speak about other issues, Susan Zeman, and I guess a couple of other folks. But in any case, Watkins is doing the same thing, or did the same thing, and I suspect Cummings is going to do the same thing too. Although I can't, we haven't seen yet what he's doing.
What do you mean? Past the 2 minutes?
I mean that interrupting people in the middle of their speeches, refusing to extend oral communications time, establishing only 2 minutes rather than 3 minutes for public hearings.
Well, it's fascinating from mayor to mayor how that looks, because if you recall, who like Hillary Bryant and definitely Lynn Robinson, they just shut you down. But Don Lane let you go. He didn't care at all.
You mean in terms of, well, I mean, they, yeah, well, Lane, I think.
When you were facing, with your back turned to the dais.
Right, well, what Lane does, he created new rules that made it illegal to block corridors, required special changes about where you could record. He tried other things. He also was the guy who refused to acknowledge us as the, you may remember, the Peace Camp 2010 people who wanted the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center at that time, Monica Martinez, to, before the cops go after somebody, have them call the center to see if there was a bed there. She refused to do that. And so, I mean, and Lane refused to press her to do it, even though at the time, I think he was on the board of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and he certainly
was. He was only on that.
Maybe not.
The only thing he's been about is Housing First, getting that model up and running in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, chattering away about that.
Solutions to homelessness.
I mean, he's been doing this, you know, this homeless shtick from his own perspective for decades.
Yeah.
And
decades.
It's too bad because he poses as a progressive and a liberal. I mean, you know, and politicians do. That's what they do. It's up to people like us and others to at least educate the community about what's really going on. I don't think we can educate them. I think they're kind of, you know, and if the community presses them, then they'll act, but not because they're well educated.
Well, it's fascinating because I know that he and Phil Kramer, both including Monica Martinez, they got together right after Occupy Santa Cruz, and there was the federal government. You know, they were doing the 100,000 homes campaign, and it's in line with the HUD, and so they naturally thought, this is great. Let's work to end homelessness. And they, you know, with Sibley Simon, they started 180 at the time and had that big seminar, and off to the races they went, changing the paradigm. But they did it in every city across the country. It just wasn't here. So Don Lane was kind of part of a national movement, and for the Don Lanes of the world it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense for people who are close to people who are suffering outside. Like, it would have made sense. The reason that the question I finally asked that person from the federal government the other night was, when is the federal government willing to concede Housing First as a failure? Or when is Congress going to, you know, have a multi-billion-dollar building program? If you don't have a building program and you're still touting Housing First, you're lying to the people.
Right on. Well, I'm going to leave it there, unless there's something you want to add.
No, thank you. Warmingcenterprogram@gmail, warmingcenterprogram.com, and our hotline is 246-1234. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, man. Bye-bye.
Later.